Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast with me, Ariane Morrissey. In a week, representatives from IMO member states will gather in London for a crucial vote. They will be asked to formally adopt the first global greenhouse gas pricing mechanism for international shipping. There have been significant diplomatic efforts behind the scenes since the framework was approved by a majority of delegates in a vote in April. Efforts from the IMO Secretary General, of course, but also from the European Union, which is working to bolster support for the deal, while at the same time, the United States is trying to convince countries to vote against it. To discuss this, I'm pleased to welcome Fotini Ioannidou, Director of Waterborne Transport at the Directorate General for Mobility and Transport of the European Commission. Welcome to the podcast, Fotini.
Many thanks for the invitation, Ariane.
I have to start with the question that virtually everyone in the maritime sector is being asked these days. How confident are you that the IMO Net Zero framework will be adopted at MEPC?
It is indeed the question. And we are, as you said, 1 week or 10 days ahead of a crucial decision point, both for international shipping, but also for multilateralism. And to reply straight to your question, my level of confidence that the framework will be adopted is high. And why is it so? Well, first, back in April, we had 63 countries that voted in favor and only 16 that voted against. Now, in terms of substance, we had no signals that countries would assess the net zero framework in a more negative way than they had done 6 months ago. On the contrary, I believe that because there was enough time, a few countries who voted no or abstained in April could be seeing the deal in a more positive way today because they had time to analyze it in a deeper manner. We have also the maritime industry, at least its greatest part, that is on board. And we had several organizations like ICS or World Shipping Council that went out with public statements of support to the deal. Of course, we know at the same time that there are strong opponents to the deal, and of course, this will weigh on the final decisions of many countries. At the same time, there is an understanding of the historic character of the moment and of the importance of the deal for the fight against climate change, but also for the future of multilateralism, as I said in the beginning. So in our view, those considerations will also have their weight. And that is why I'm confident that the framework will be adopted by a large majority.
Interesting that you say that some countries might be swayed in favor. Are you more or less confident than you were 6 months ago, immediately after the framework was approved?
Well, I would say we have the same level of confidence as we had back in April. And we remain really very much hopeful that all the work that the IMO member states have done for many years is going to be positively approached and welcomed by a positive decision in October.
Now, I was referring to it in the introduction. There's going to be many forces at play. Who do you think will be the main power brokers during the MEPC meeting? In other words, who should we be keeping a close eye on during the week?
Well, the deal we have reached in April is the result of long and difficult negotiations. And to those negotiations, it's really the vast majority of IMO member states that took part, and they took part in good faith. And I have to say that the dedication of the delegates that have participated in successive MEPC intersessional meetings to deliver on what we have all agreed back in 2023 in the context of the IMO GHG strategy. So this dedication was really impressive and heartwarming. Of course, As in every negotiation, some were more engaged more heavily than others. And I can certainly mention among those the European Union, China and Brazil, and the Pacific Islands, although in the last 4 months of the negotiations, we had also big flag states and the industry that were taking a very important role. And I think these are the parties that will likely play a central role again this October. And I can certainly confirm that we as European Union and all our member states will be very active in October. But let me underline this, that for us, every country counts. That is why we are reaching out to all countries. And for us, every country should engage.
We can't avoid discussing the role of the United States in those negotiations. We know that their statements during NEPC 83 in April did not stop delegates from reaching an agreement, but how different could it be this time? In other words, how likely is it that the US will manage to kill the IMO net zero framework?
Well, indeed, the measures announced by the United States mid-August are serious. And they include possible retaliation tailored at the shipping sector. In that sense, they certainly cannot be disregarded and they will weigh in the decisions of the states. That is, there is no doubt about it. At the same time, as I said, states are very well conscious of the historic importance of this framework. And we really believe and hope that many will continue to follow the EU's lead in supporting the deal, because this is exactly what is needed for the good of the planet and of the multilateral legal order. Hence, I believe that the US opposition, while certainly disruptive and important, will not be sufficient to destroy the commitment of the global community to deliver this first of its kind global decarbonization agreement.
And what has been happening behind the scenes since April? What has been the EU's approach and who have you been engaging with as a priority?
Well, of course, the EU has been reaching out towards third countries through different means. As always, we had regular technical contacts at expert level, but on top, we have mobilized EU delegations across the world, and we have done this in close cooperation with EU member states and their embassies around the world. Of course, we are also discussing the topic with international partners in other fora, for example, in general climate discussions or in other sectoral and political channels. And we are not alone in this. We know that a number of other supporters of the framework have been doing the same. For example, Brazil, who is hosting the upcoming COP, but also Chile, UK, and many others.
And, you know, sometimes in elections, we refer to the concept of swing states or swing votes. So potentially IMO member states who could change their votes. So how significant is that? Because presumably there's a block of countries that is definitely voting in favor. There's a block of countries that's definitely voting against. So what are the countries that you can potentially influence either way?
Well, that is difficult to say at this stage, because also the situation is quite evolving. So what I have to say is that we are reaching out to each and every country. And the situation is also changing. So I would not like to single out specific IMO states.
And now in terms of the EU's own internal diplomacy, you mentioned communicating with all your member states. Are they all still on board? Because we know that there's obviously a challenging geopolitical context. There's also been pressure from some high-profile ship owners. So is everybody within the EU bloc still on board the agreement and voting in favour?
Absolutely. I can fully confirm that everybody is on board.
Now, I'm curious to hear about your assessment on the role that China has played in the negotiations so far, because for many years, the EU and China used to be on the opposite sides of that decarbonisation debate. So how is the relationship now?
Well, on this specific file, I have to say that China has been a very important actor. We had very different positions on certain elements, and notably on the question of a universal levy on GHG emissions, which the EU supported and very heavily, together with major flag states and Pacifics. We had to converge. The commonality we had maybe since the beginning is that we had the shared commitment to achieve a deal, an ambitious global decarbonization deal for shipping, and in accordance with what we have agreed, all IMO member states have agreed in the context of the 2023 strategy. And in reality, this commitment resulted to the fact that the EU, China, and other partners, for example, Japan, Brazil, Singapore, to name a few, we were working till the latest hour to overcome our differences. And that is what this well that enabled all of us to reach a deal in April. Clearly, we will continue to collaborate with China, but we are going to continue to collaborate with all other parties in IMO because the adventure is not finishing in October. After the adoption of the net zero framework, we will have a lot of work in the coming 2 years to develop and adopt a significant number of guidelines to implement the framework. And these negotiations are likely to prove as difficult as the ones we had so far. So the game is not over in October.
And you mentioned the Pacific small island states. What has been your message for those countries since April? Because we know that at MEPC 83, most of them abstained because they were hoping for a higher level of ambition. So what have you been telling them?
Well, I mean, of course, we fully respect their disappointment with the IMO not adopting a universal levy. And I would just like to remind that we, as EU, were one of the heaviest supporters of this universal levy because we firmly believed that a levy would have helped deliver the transition at the smallest possible cost and in a really just and equitable manner. At the same time, an international negotiation is an international negotiation. You don't have exactly what your initial request was for, and so we really believe that the framework, as has been finally agreed, is a tremendous achievement still, which will bring us in a credible manner on a path to net zero emissions by 2050. We still believe that is a result which we can be proud of and which deserves the support of all climate ambitious parties. So my message to the small island states is let the better not be the enemy of the good. We stand a chance to adopt the first of its kind global agreement to reduce and eventually eliminate GHG emissions from a whole sector. And I'm afraid there is no credible alternative to this deal, and there will be no chance to negotiate another one. The choice we have is either to adopt this framework or to abandon the hopes for any global effort to decarbonize shipping. So for us, the choice is clear, and I really hope that our friends from the small island states will come to the same conclusion. And certainly, I mean, if we look back to what IMO transition usually is, agreements are usually enhanced and ambitions strengthened over time. And the same could be true for the net zero framework, which will be subject to periodic reviews. But this will only be possible if we have the first step done in October by adopting this framework.
You said something quite interesting about it's basically either this framework or nothing. So what would be the consequences if the vote does not go through and the IMO net zero framework is not adopted? Is there no plan B? Is there no option to negotiate something different?
Well, first of all, we did not believe that there is a reason to consider such a scenario. As I said, we are very hopeful because the support for this framework is strong. So there is no reason to expect a change in this respect. But in the unlikely scenario of a failure, the first consequence would be a harmful fragmentation. So countries and regions around the world would deploy their own measures to reduce GHG emissions from shipping. And this will raise, of course, exponentially administrative barriers and costs for shipping. And consequences would be felt also beyond the specific scope of shipping, because this framework is a test for the capacity of the international community to act together on a global threat like climate change. So this means that a possible failure would have also severe consequences for global climate negotiations, but more broader for multilateralism in general. And that is why this deal is so important and why it is so crucial for all supporters of a just international legal order to vote in favor.
And now, if we look at the next steps after the scheduled adoption of the IMO net zero framework, there have been several ship owners and industry association calling for harmonization between the EU and the IMO regulations to avoid double taxation. So is the IMO text currently on the table strong enough to replace EU ETS and or fuel EU maritime?
Well, first of all, I mean, of course, we are very much aware that everybody is asking us even before the adoption what we are going to do. I would say a legitimate question. And again, first of all, we need to have a global regulation adopted now in October. This is the first step before envisaging any review of existing EU measures. In fact, the EU legislative framework, both the EU emissions trading scheme and the fuel EU maritime regulation, contain specific review clauses to take into account future IMO policy developments. So in line with this, closes the Commission as soon as we have the agreement. Now in October, we'll start the examination of the agreement and compare it with Fuel EU and ETS. It will compare it in terms of ambition and environmental integrity. And on that basis, we will consider the review of both legislation as appropriate, notably to avoid any double burden for the shipping companies, but we need to make sure that we avoid also backsliding. Now, in terms of timing, we have the ETS directive that says that the Commission must present its assessment within 18 months of the adoption of the framework and before it becomes operational, while the Fuel EU regulation says without delay. I can assure you that everything will start without delay as soon as we have the adoption. And of course, the assessments can be accompanied according to the legislation with legislative proposals to amend both legislations.
But we know that updating regulation can take time. So given the timelines involved in updating potentially both fuel EU and all EU ETS, can you guarantee that there won't be a period where the two regulation might overlap?
Well, that's a difficult question. Of course, nothing can be guaranteed, but on our side, our aim is to try to avoid such an overlapping. So that would be our aim. So we will need, once we have the October agreement, to start defining the timeline of our proposals and how we can make sure that there is no overlapping. That would be difficult for the industry.
And now, when we talk about harmonized regulation, I was just curious what this could look like in practical terms. Would it be simply a case of scrapping EU regulation, or are there other options that could be on the table?
It is really very early for me to say what it would look like. So the analysis is really in the beginning, because, I mean, okay, we have started analyzing a bit in anticipation of a positive of the adoption in October, but we have only started this. So it's very early to say what the conclusions of such analysis would be, and how possible review of legislation would look like. It is also fair to say that the architecture of the market-based element of the net zero framework is very different from the EU ETS. So this is also an element that makes the comparison particularly challenging. But as I said already, we are very much committed to the review clauses of our EU legislation, and we will deliver on the obligations we have at the highest possible speed.
And now, if the IMO Net Zero Framework gets adopted, you refer to it, the next step is going to be the development of guidelines. What areas will the EU focus on as a priority? What do you want to see included in those guidelines?
Well, the number of the guidelines is huge. So there needs to be a huge continued effort for the year to come, at least, if not more. And in a sense, all the guidelines are a priority, because all of them must be finished and adopted before the framework enters into force. So the time ahead of us is really very little for a huge amount of work. Now, if we compare in terms of priorities, of course, we can see two areas where we need to have extra efforts to advance even quicker than quick. The first one is the guidelines on the reward for the use of clean fuels. And why this? Because the market needs clarity as soon as possible on the business case for the production and use of such fuels, of course, technologies and energy sources. And without such clarity, investments might not come. So that's why this is even a priority among priorities. And the second priority, I would say, is the development of the guidelines on the setup and the organization of the Net Zero Fund, because the fund is central to the implementation of the framework. And particularly for the disbursement of money, for the reward, and for a just and equitable transition. So this is another key element of the scheme. And of course, we know that it is hugely complicated to establish a fund, we will need time for it to reach the sailing speed. So the basic elements of the management of the fund needs to be established as up. So some priority as well among very important other priorities to this guideline.
And to finish, if I ask you to look further into the future, I know the EU initially backed the idea of a flat levy. Are you hopeful that the framework will eventually be strengthened to bring it closer to what you originally wanted? And is this something that the EU is going to work towards in the coming months or years?
Well, with this framework, somehow we enter uncharted territory, because it's compared to what has been agreed so far, it's the most ambitious measure ever to be adopted and implemented at global level. So it is quite difficult to speculate what is going to happen on the outcome of periodic reviews. So it's difficult to say. At the same time, I think I said it already, the IMO has a transition to start small and expand its regulation. So there is no reason why this shouldn't be the case with the net zero framework. For me, for us, this framework will send the right incentives to the market for supplying the necessary amounts of sustainable fuels to meet the agreed targets. And this will be, let's say, the positive signal that will be given to all parties to explore potential revisions and reinforcement of the net zero framework in order to make sure that we deliver on all 2023 strategy decarbonization goals. So, yes, I would say there is some good prospect looking at the past that there could be positive reviews and reinforcement in the future.
Thank you very much, Fotini.
Thank you very much, Ariane.